I was thinking as I kind of, you know, the show started here, I was thinking, oh, goody. We get to talk about science today. Real science-based environmental issues, right? And Montana DEQ Director Sonia Nowakowski is our guest. So we'll catch up to date on, well, there was an important decision out of the Big Hole River, right? As Montana is such a recreation state, it's a very popular, vital fishery in southwest Montana. We'll go into the decision where it was officially labeled as impaired. What does that mean, and what's the steps going forward there? But energy is on our plate here. Sonia Nowakowski chairs the governor's energy task force, and as we look at our energy, there's a ton of questions that come up there as well. The accelerating demand, artificial intelligence, our grid is aging, new transmission lines. Yeah, we got science to talk about here today on Real Issues on Voices Old Montana. This one, as we talk about the Big Hole, you know, it's right in your neighborhood, KDBM 1490 AM. Thank you for joining us all over. We'll just announce our guest, introduce our guest, I should say, and then get right into the discussion here. And that's Sonia Nowakowski, who's director of the Montana Department of Environmental Quality. You look at the 400 employees and all those projects. Air, land, water, and even more as we talk about energy. And Sonia's got some experience in energy as well. As we welcome you, good morning, Director Nowakowski. How are you?
I'm great. Good morning. Thanks so much for having me on the show, and happy to talk about the Big Hole as well as energy or anything else that's on folks' minds.
Yeah, I appreciate that. You know, and I look at that 400 employees, but you probably have, you know, 800 little projects going on, or maybe even 1,200. It seems like your department is real busy. Talk about all the things that you guys do. Then we'll get into these two key issues.
You bet. That's what we were just talking about this. I was visiting with one of my colleagues about how kind of you have to have a special mindset to work at DEQ, and that's a mindset that the work is never completely done. I think I could work all day, every day, and there would still be a lot of work that we needed to tackle and get done with when we're covering these big, important issues. As you mentioned, air quality, you know, we're dealing with refineries and mines. We're dealing with gravel pits. We're dealing with water quality, public water supplies. Every time you turn on your faucet, DEQ is in the background, making sure that water is safe for you to drink. It's a big responsibility, but I also think that really speaks to the character of the people who work at DEQ. They realize the difference that they make in people's lives. They realize the role that they play. They know they are doing the right thing, and they know the work they do is really challenging, and that's why they love it.
Well, I'm glad to hear that, too. That's reassuring because, you know, oftentimes these are the people who give us the vital information to which we make vital decisions on as well. And I want to make sure that they're acknowledged and thanked for that, too, because if we don't have accurate information, it's tough to make good decisions. And then, with that, let's start off with the Big Hole River, right? There's been a lot of research. I read what you guys had said about it. There's some environmental groups I thought were playing politics with their statement regarding it. But as I look at all the work that you guys did and the science behind it to come to this decision about impairment, of course, you know, they're going to say you were just dragging your feet on it, but I don't see that in the way you process this. Let's go there. What was this decision about impairment, and what did it lead to, or how did we get there?
Yeah, you bet. So as you mentioned, you've seen in recent news that we determined that essentially aquatic life and the recreational uses in the Big Hole River are being affected by eutrophication. A big word, but it basically that means there's too many nutrients like nitrogen and phosphorus in the Big Hole.
Yeah.
And where that comes from, you know, rain washes farm fertilizers and animal waste into the tributaries and into the Big Hole. I think it's really important that we note that there aren't any industrial discharges into the Big Hole River. That's where we have this difference between what we call non-point source and point source. And at DEQ, we regulate point source discharges. So if there were industrial discharges, let's say there was a wastewater treatment plant or an any kind of industrial facility, we have the ability to regulate those. But we don't have any of those discharging into the Big Hole River. Really, we're dealing with agricultural runoff. That's, you know, irrigation that returns flows and livestock practices kind of contribute to the nutrients that, that end up in the big hole. And that's not something DEQ regulates. We realize that's a way of life, and that is a big balance. That is huge. Our responsibility is that balance. And so basically with this decision that we made, I think it's also important context that the first streams in the big hole were listed on the state's impaired water list clear back in 1988. And in total, DEQ has completed 91 different, what we call total maximum daily loads. And really what that is looking at the river for different pollutants and putting it on a pollution diet. So the big hole has been on a diet 91 times already. And this is a new diet. Basically, when we list these segments as impaired and we complete these TMDLs, that also means the river is eligible for some federal funding, and we can do some additional restoration work. And so the Big Hole watershed, we've spent about $1.4 million in Clean Water Act funding to implement different projects to address everything, you know, sediment, temperature, flow, habitat impairments. And so this determination puts us on that same path where we can use these proven practices that address sources of pollution that contribute to nutrients. And so we'll be working with stakeholders, we'll be prioritizing the necessary TMDLs or diet plans, so to speak, in consultation with an advisory group and the public to make improvements along this river.
Those proven practices, where'd they come from? Are there other river systems that we are looking at as a model post or even, you know, pre going into what we're doing here in the Big Hole?
Yeah, sure. We have lots of experience with these, and that's why we have a lot of different partners. Even some of the folks who often litigate us have been partners in these projects. And as I mentioned, it really can be habitat improvements. You can go in and there's these algal blooms, and we can go in and find ways to reduce those blooms. We can do more shrubbery and different items to try to cool the temperature in the water. There's a lot of science and a lot of work and a lot of different players. We work really closely with our partners at Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, and even oftentimes Department of Natural Resources and Conservation on this, or fencing off certain stretches of river. I know those are fighting words, and we're very thoughtful about that. But taking steps to ensure maybe we don't have as much livestock in the river in certain areas. Again, this is not a regulatory approach either. This is really a habitat big picture approach. I think a pollution diet is the best way to look at it, because it's just how you would approach a diet. You can't just exercise all the time, or you can't just stop eating. You got to find that balance.
How long before you think you find results in this?
It generally takes some time. We'll need to go through, prioritize, find out what this diet plan looks like in the next year or so, and then I think you could start to see some projects being implemented in the next field season, and then maybe another year out where you would see some of these improvements taking shape, where you would see maybe a reduction. We did this recently in some stretches of the Gallatin River, and we've seen vast improvements in the Gallatin River. And again, we really do this thanks to a lot of different partners.
And the fishery, you know, how's it been impacted? And obviously, you know, water quality will lead to better fisheries as well. What else do you do, you know, outside of those non-point source considerations?
Sure. And that's what, you know, essentially when you're put on this kind of diet plan, let's say something came through with a point source discharge, it would be under additional scrutiny. Another big piece of this puzzle are septic systems. And, you know, rural areas, you often do have kind of homes being built there with septics, and being thoughtful about where septics are placed, being thoughtful about what kind of septics are used to ensure that there isn't sort of any kind of leakage or drainage that happens into a watershed. So these are pieces of the puzzle. It really is going in and determining what all the factors are contributing to this, and then what is our authority to do anything about that, and what good practices can we do.
And talk about the collaboration with the local landowners. You guys have been working with them for some time. They're aware of this, and they're probably coming to the table maybe with some ideas, but you know what works and then what's not going to work for them. This overall process involves a lot of stakeholders, as you noted. But the landowners are the ones there on the ground who are you know, stewards of the land as well.
Sure, and that's what, you know, we do this kind of on a voluntary incentive-based program. Mm-hmm. We have some cost-sharing grants, the watershed groups, the conservation districts, and conservation partners. They all enhance water quality in our fisheries. There's some things, the Montana Association of Conservation Districts has a program, I think, called Ranching for Rivers. I don't know a lot about it, but it's a cost-share initiative that provides some funding for fencing. There's FWP's Future Fisheries Improvement Program, and that's another grant program that partners directly with landowners and conservation groups to restore wild fish habitat. And then there's just a number of local organizations. There's the Big Hole Watershed Committee, you know, the Gallatin Watershed Council, and they all work together on these issues. They work with agricultural producers to upgrade, like, irrigation efficiency. We look at restoration of riparian zones, managing drought effectively. So it really is an effort by a lot of different groups.
And is it the Big Hole River, tributaries? You know, let's look at that. And then I'm also interested in how the rest of our river systems are when it comes to maybe this issue specifically.
Yeah, you bet. And that's what it is. You have to also keep in mind that there are a lot of rivers in Montana. And we are, well, we say we have 400 people. We have a lot of different responsibilities. And this is one section that does this monitoring and keeping an eye on things. And that's what we also have our partners at the Environmental Protection Agency. That's, you hear words about, like, our integrated report that we do, or our triennial review that we do. And these are all processes where the public gets to weigh in and actually help us set our priorities. We know the Big Hole River is really a gem. And that is, I think, another reason why we've had 91 different impairment findings on that river. There has been this commitment and strong feelings about making sure we're doing what we can and what is appropriate for that river. But we are constantly working with stakeholders to try to prioritize, because there are so many rivers and streams and tributaries in Montana, all worthy of our attention. But we are one group, and so that's why we rely a lot on these conservation districts and different organizations to help us with our priorities.
Yeah, and I appreciate that and keeping it local as well. Are there violations of federal standards that are maybe going to get the feds involved here, or what's their role to play in this?
Sure, not at the Big Hole. They don't have a role here. Again, there's no point source dischargers, yeah. So there's really nobody to point the finger at on the Big Hole. We're all in this together. And that's why we think that our approach is the best approach, to take a look at this, to set a TMDL or come up with what we call a kind of a diet plan, and then bring in our partners to inform some watershed restoration plans. But this isn't a situation where we would see federal involvement other than through funding. It, again, makes us eligible for some Clean Water Act funding to help us supplement the dollars that we have and that some of these conservation groups might have.
I think it's a good move, obviously, as we get more and more concerned about environmental quality and that impact, you know, to take these steps. And it stands out as an example as well, right? I mean, people are going to look to this, Sonia, and so does that play into this? I mean, as an example of good local stewardship over a river system, can the Big Hole River be that?
Yeah, and that's what, you know, I really want to thank, for example, Save Wild Trout for their diligence and their collection of data that we needed to help shape and make this determination. We always encourage others to support not just restoration projects, you know, but local watershed planning by organizations like the Big Hole Watershed Committee or Save Wild Trout. They also can help us with the monitoring. I mean, there's almost 170,000 miles of rivers and streams in Montana. You know, we're divided by the Continental Divide. We've got the Missouri, the Yellowstone, the Clark Fork. We have a lot of rivers there. We could monitor and monitor and monitor, and it still probably wouldn't be enough for a lot of folks. And so that's why we really count on some of these groups to help us collect and share data. And I think the Big Hole River is a really good example of that.
DEQ.MT.gov for more information on that. We'll move to the Energy Task Force. Got a couple of phone calls lined up here about water, one about mining as well. And Sonia Nowakowski, our current director of the Montana Department of Environmental Quality, DEQ, served as an energy mining division administrator as well. You've been listening to our fraud files from the CSI office, Commissioner of Securities and Insurance. That's James Brown, along with Adriana Hines. True crime podcast, crime podcasts right here in Montana, right? And they are so educational. You can find yourself in any one of these stories, really, about, oh, wow, that kind of sounds like something I might have done as well. It's called Fraud Files. Look for the podcast on voicesofmontana.com and any place that you get your favorite podcasts. Our favorite Montana DEQ director is Sonia Nowakowski. How do you like that, Sonia? Just throw that in there. A little
I
transition,
love it.
Yeah.
I'll take that.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Who did start life as a disc jockey or did suffer through a period of being a disc jockey in life as well? So sorry it's in
my
your blood.
Favorite job ever.
Yeah, yeah. It's good. And a lot of things. I want to get on this energy task force a bit later on as well because there's a ton of stuff there. Again, energy planning, leadership, utility regulation, and there's still a lot of things to work out. We're talking about the Big Hole River, and a couple of things have come up with water quality with one of our listeners, Nancy, in Roundup. And she's got a question for our DEQ director, Sonia Nowakowski, today on Voices of Montana. Good morning, Nancy.
Hey, good morning, Tom. Thanks for taking my phone call. Good morning, Sonia. Okay, I want to talk about our state, and then I want to blow off an international threat to our waters here in the United States. But I contacted our Congressman Downey last week and on the development of our state. I don't have to tell you that at one time in prehistoric times that, you know, Montana was Sahara Desert. We're having sudden and rushed development in our state. People are building houses and businesses where there's never been water before, and they're putting in cisterns, then they get angry because they have to haul water in. And I'm not sure if illegal well drilling is taking place, and I'm really concerned about this, and also the diversion of our water, like the Horseshoe Dam taking water from the effect on the Flathead Lake. That's my first talking point. The second, Sonia, I think is far more dangerous. We have international threat to our waters in the United States. We have foreigners buying up our agricultural land. Even the Chinese are doing it with cash. There's no record of what they own and purchase. And they're growing crops here because they're not allowed in their own country to use the water to do this, and they're shipping it back home. Even the Great Lakes are endangered by the globalists. They actually want to take the water out of the Great Lakes and sell it to the Middle East. And in 2008, Canada was actually going to do this, and they were stopped. It was a 10-year battle in the courts with the governors of the states that border the Great Lakes, and they put an end to it. It's called the Great Lakes Water Pact. And I think that is a very dangerous threat to our country, and very few people know about it. I'd like to talk about it more, but I know we're cut on time, short on time. Thank you for listening. Do you know about this threat, and what about the drilling in our state of Montana and the development? Should there be more restrictions on this? And thank you, Sonia.
Yeah, good stuff, Nancy. I mean, Sonia, as we talk about all those things on your plate, national security is also one of them when it comes to our environmental resources.
Yeah, absolutely. And Nancy, thanks for calling in. I'm actually from Roundup. I grew up there. Go Panthers. boy, if we want to talk about water, you know, one thing I do have to note is and give in Roundup is a shout out to the improved water from when I grew up there. And now with that new regional water system, my dad still lives in Roundup and jokes all the time when I come home. He says, hey, kid, we can drink the water now. It's pretty impressive. So, yeah, but no, in terms of, you know, we work very closely with our partners in Canada on the International Joint Commission. I think Nancy might have mentioned that in terms of talking about how water is protected. And there is an important distinction, and this it might be a little not get to the full point in Nancy's question, but at DEQ, we oversee water quality. Just quality. And so that's what we engage with our partners in Canada, for example, on Lake Coconusa with selenium standards, water quantity in Montana is overseen by the Department of Natural Resources and Conservation, our sister agency. So water quality versus water quantity. But we do have a Water Use Act in 1971, and I think there is a recognition of how important water is in Montana. And we have lots of discussions going on about that exempt well, and there are definitely systems in place if there are concerns about illegal wells being drilled. You water doesn't just have to be physically available. It's also got to be legally available. And so we do have some great laws in place to ensure things are happening, keeping an eye on that, and that if you have concerns, you have a place to voice those concerns.
Do you see us getting to a point where our water usage is now, and I'm sure it happens in certain areas, right, is taxing our resources to a point of, you know, consideration, something needs to be done about it?
I sure hope not. I think, you know, when we talk about water usage, I think that's also really comes down to at the local level. That's where, you know, you're paying, if you live in a community and you're paying, or you're part of an HOA, where you're part of a water system, I think those have to be some local issues and local decisions. I don't see the state sort of having a heavy hand in that, or taxing water, or taking a look at, you know, consumption reductions. You do see lots of issues, you know, on rivers, and FWP and DNRC are really the lead on that. We have that water quality role. But I think when we talk about water and we talk about residential water use, that's really a local decision.
Montana DEQ Director Sonia Nowakowski will take the call from Skip in Hamilton. It's going to be about the Sheep Creek Mine, a critical minerals mine in the area as well. And I got 2 minutes, sorry, and we'll have to answer your question on the other side of the break. But good morning, sir.
So good morning, Tom. And Sonia, I've talked to you before. I was on a different program. And I asked you for cliff notes on, in fact, what's going on with the Sheep Creek Mine at the state level and the involvement of the DEQ and what their responsibilities are when it comes to this kind of mining and any kind of mining in the state as far as permitting and bonding. And so that people can be educated, I like to ask questions that have an educational answer. Would you please tell us where the DEQ stands right now, and the applicants for especially the Sheep Creek Mine, there's a lot of people listening on 1240 here in Hamilton. Where is that company or companies stand on their obligations in order to proceed forward at the state level, not at the federal level, as they are monitored? I believe all their baby steps are monitored by the Forest Service. Would you please tell us where they stand, and what should we as people who are most affected by the possible downstream outcomes of this mine, where do we stand? And please just take off with it and tell us what you can, ma'am, and thank you for coming on.
And we'll have to continue that on the other side, but give us a quick little 30-second overview, Sonia. Thanks, Skip.
Sure. The big overview is that Sheep Creek Mine has not submitted an application to the state for mining exploration, and it's our belief that they need to submit that application for their activities to continue. They're working with their federal partners, and we eagerly await their state application, and I'll talk more about that when we get back from the break.
Great. And that is, I mean, something that we always have to balance here, too, because especially as we look at the need for critical minerals, and the Sheep Creek Mine has pretty high concentrations of some pretty key critical minerals as well. So DEQ director is Sonia Nowakowski. She's with us here now and has been a number of years in the DEQ department, but also spent 15 years in the Legislative Services Division. So knows an awful lot about that process here as well. We'll get on to energy because there's just a ton to talk about. You know, the new four-letter word is a two-letter acronym, AI. And from there you go data. Data centers, and you know, we still got a lot of things to work out. But let's go back. Thank you, Sonia, for being here. Appreciate that. Sheep Creek Mine. How do you balance this, right? I mean, there are critical minerals there in high concentrations. In an area, there's a lot of sensitivities for the environment. What's the status, as Skip had asked, and how do you move forward here?
Yeah, you bet. And that's what
right now, the Sheep Creek Mine, you've seen in the media a lot of coverage. They have their application in with the U.S. Forest Service because this project is on some federal land. And so they're working through that process. And this is pretty common in Montana for mining projects where you have a mix of federal, state, and private lands. But when it comes to the state and the private lands that are also going to potentially be disrupted by exploration, the DEQ plays a role. And so we are awaiting that application. They'll need to submit that through the Montana Metal Mine Reclamation Act, and that would apply to the Sheep Creek Exploration Project. And that's for basically non-exempt operations on federal land and just for the disturbance of land during the exploration. As Skip mentioned, in Montana, that also includes bonding requirements where they will have to post a bond to ensure that if that company were to leave unexpectedly or something were to happen, that we would have cash on hand to go in and reclaim. And the permitting process I also think is really important. So when Sheep Creek submits their application for an exploration permit, that will trigger the Montana Environmental Policy Act. And we as an agency will conduct an environmental assessment. And that environmental assessment determines the significance of the project. It also takes in stakeholder comments. It involves the public. And then we come out the other side and make a determination on whether or not they meet the permitting requirements and also whether or not the impacts are significant enough that we need to do further environmental review. So there are a lot of steps to go in this process, bond requirements as well. Can't mine in Montana until you have a permit and you post your bond.
I appreciate that. And there's more to that discussion as well. And when those things happen, that probably kicks those discussions up more in earnest. I'm going to move here as your chair of the Governor's Energy Task Force, Sonia. And thanks for coming on today. Appreciate that. We wanted to hit this. There's a lot of good stuff in this. You guys have released a draft, and I certainly encourage folks to go and take part of this. Look at the draft. Look at some of those recommendations there. There's a number of them, almost too many, right? a ton there. And it is deq.mt.gov, and you can /energy. And then task force. You'll find it if you search for it. I think I'm gonna jump to a key issue here. Give us an overview as well. But we're looking at energy deficiencies in areas across the country as well as globally, right? And they say that about half of our new U.S. electricity demand growth through 2030, which is substantial, will come from data centers. So, you know, those are things that are front and center. Did we get past some of that and looking into all of this? Because as I look at the draft report, it does what I think we need to do is have a good, solid, honest conversation about energy going forward into the future.
Thanks so much. Yeah, and I am really proud of the task force. There were 20 folks on this task force, and boy, they stepped up and took this challenge on and came up with close to 10 pages of recommendations and key strategies. And they focused on ensuring that we increase the supply of affordable and reliable energy for Montana. And it was an all-of-the-above approach. We talked about everything. We talked about fossil fuel, natural gas, wind, solar, geothermal, hydro, nuclear. And we had a few specific recommendations for different types of energy, but it wasn't the result of preference. Really, what we did was we identified roadblocks that could be addressed to unlock some further potential, for example, for geothermal and nuclear energy in Montana. I think the task force really agreed that a diverse energy portfolio, and that includes renewables, is necessary for Montana. I think there was also a strong feeling that we need to reform utility regulation. A lot of talk about your Public Service Commission and how they can improve regulatory efficiency, transparency, and be more consistent in some of their decision-making. Some recommendations for structural reform of that commission. And also just establishing some energy leadership for Montana, having our energy functions better organized as a state. And I think, you know, I'll get to the nut graph. This wasn't just a data center task force. I get a little sore when people say, oh, you were just there to bring on data centers. Data centers are certainly an example of new large loads, which this task force looked at. But there are many other potential new customers that could be impacted by large load recommendations. So Northwestern Energy customers that fit into the large load category, that includes major hospital systems, mines, manufacturing, refineries, wood products, and even agricultural infrastructure. So some examples are like Ash Grove Cement, Benefis Health Systems, Phillips 66. And so we had hard conversations about serving new large loads. And why that's important is in Montana, as residential customers, those of us in Northwestern service territory, we don't get to choose who our energy supplier is. It's Northwestern Energy. But these large customers, so if they're greater than 5 megawatts, they get to shop. They get to decide where they buy power. They could even build their own power behind. And so that really takes me to that data center discussion. And what I thought was fascinating about this group is data center, I was recently on a panel and it was called Data Centers, Friend or Foe. And we had a really hard conversation at starting out that data center is are neither inherently a friend or a foe. Mm-hmm. We've got to balance artificial intelligence innovation with natural resource preservation. And that's what the DEQ is doing. We are focused on proactive regulation to safeguard our water, our grid, and our community. And when I put my energy hat on, and Tom, you touched on this, we're a little bit at an existential crossroads with these data center proposals. We need to harness the economic benefits of digital infrastructure, but we've also got to protect local residents from, you know, their power bills going up. Mm-hmm. And that's what the governor's task force is working on, is implementing these ratepayer protections, grid upgrades, and transparent local planning.
Well, and that's one thing I see that is missing in it. And it's kind of by, you know, protectionism to a certain degree of ideas and plans and things like that. But whatever data center is going to come in, they don't release their full plans. We don't have full transparency about what kind of water usage you're going to see, what kind of energy bite it's going to take. And so how do we get over that? How do we get over that transparency? When are they going to start answering these questions so we know and can make decisions based on what we know?
Right. And I talk about this a lot. And that is that DEQ, you know, we do have strong environmental protections. We have our Clean Air Act, our Clean Water Act. And so when they submit applications for permits, that will also trigger the Montana Environmental Policy Act. And we will go through and we will determine whether or not they meet the regulatory requirements. But you really hit the nail on the head with that transparency issue. And that is the question of their social license. Mm-hmm. And there's no regulatory agency, there's no state law that grants you that social license. And that is up to the data centers to go out there and be proactive, to talk about economic diversification, you know, the capital investments they're making, how they'll expand the tax base and create high-paying construction jobs, localized tech jobs. You know, how does AI position Montana as a hub for AI or global digital infrastructure? You know, we don't want to be lagging behind. And also the big piece of the puzzle from the task force is how can they help us modernize our infrastructure?
Yeah.
You know, utility companies like Northwestern Energy are going to need to upgrade and expand our transmission grids. We haven't in a long time. They're getting old. And data centers might help us build more resilient statewide energy systems. But, you know, I'm not trying to sell anybody a data center. That's up to the data centers, and they need to be transparent and talk with locals to get that social license. That doesn't come from the DEQ.
And it's tough in today's atmosphere because it's hard to have an honest conversation and try to, you know, just be genuine about it when there's so many positions. I think there's a lot of misinformation about it. I think there are groups out there that use issues like this to better themselves or you know, in the financial world, so to speak. So it becomes a bit cloudy. What steps do we take to clear that up going forward?
No, and that's one thing, and I think we just keep talking about it. I think public forums are a good place to have those discussions. That is where I've really struggled a little bit, is what I would like to hear is if people obviously have legitimate concerns about these, but what I need to better understand is where are the shortcomings in the law? We talked about the Water Use Act of 1971 and that, you know, groundwater extraction has to be legally available and it won't physically harm existing water rights or overall aquifer sustainability. And so we see those comments, oh, they're going to drain the aquifer. Well, we do have the Water Use Act that is supposed to protect against that. And so is there some shortcoming in the Water Use Act that I'm just not seeing? We talk about all the new energy that they'll need. If for example, they were going to build a new natural gas plant, that would certainly require air quality permits from the DEQ and a very robust process that would involve the public. And so that's what I'm looking for, some real examples of where are the shortcomings in the law when we talk about environmental protections and data centers. We permit things like hard rock mines, like refineries, and we do it well, and we do it in a way where we balance our environmental protections and we allow these projects to move forward. And I believe we can do the same with data centers. And so I would love to have some hard conversations with folks. And I also know, you know, there is that quality of life question. Communities near data centers are concerned about noise pollution, backup diesel generators, light pollution. And those are local issues too.
Yep. I appreciate that. And I believe the same that, and especially, I don't know, I'm a Montanan. I love Montana. I love Montanans. I think we can do the job better than almost anybody out there as well. We just all have to come to the table with, open eyes about things, too. Just a few minutes left. Sonia Nowakowski is with us, our director of the Montana Department of Environmental Quality. That door is open, deq.mt.gov. Always searching for public input on things. As this chair of the governor's task force, and we run ourselves short of time on a lot of things here, really go and check this draft out and look at the recommendations and put your thoughts together. Sonia, are we going to be able to meet our growing energy need?
That's a great question. And that's what I think Montana is really, as I mentioned, kind of at an existential crossroads on this issue. Electricity demand in the region, it's expected to increase by 20% in the next decade. And that's not just about data centers. That's about population growth, ongoing economic electrification. I mean, my fridge sends me messages, if my son leaves the door open, everything's electrified.
Yeah.
And then we just have this rapid rise of power intensive technologies. And then you also add in the data center discussion. And Montana has some choices to make. The Colstrip facility has generated a lot of megawatts for a lot of years, but that plant is aging. At the same time, we are seeing this pushback kind of in certain areas of the state with wind development. We had some things happen in the primary about zoning. And Montana's got to make some decisions. We can't just shut down. We have to have all of the above. We have abundant energy resources. But meeting future reliability and affordability is going to be a complex challenge. We're going to need more natural gas plants to come online. We're going to need to figure that out. We're going to need more wind and solar. We need to figure that out. And so we do need to have some hard conversations as Montanans. Montana also has been historically an energy exporter. We have sent a lot of our hydro and our power to Washington, Oregon, and we plan to continue doing that. We would like to continue to be an energy exporter. We also have to meet our own needs. But I think another huge piece is going to be what market Montana decides to be a part of. These regional markets are going to be a big piece of the conversation. And the governor's task force made some pretty strong and explicit recommendations about advancing regional markets and transmission development.
I think that, that's one of my
this on our own.
One of my big takeaways there as well is let's plan together all across the board on this. So we need more people on board and less mud thrown out about
it.
Sonia, thank you so much for the job you do, for the job that your people do as well in protecting Montana. Appreciate that.
Thank you. It was great to be on the show again.
Thanks for joining us for the podcast. And join us weekdays live from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. for more Voices of Montana on great radio stations all across our Treasure State.